thank you very much, John. It's a pleasure to be here.
Part of my work requires me every now and then to do public speaking. And it's the most nervous thing that I get to do in my work. So it's not as easy as some people think it is. And so when I came in today and I saw the bottles on the table, I was glad. Because I thought, you know, this is got to be a really good Baptist church. And so while John was relieved, I was disappointed. All joking aside, it's a pleasure for me to be here. And thank you, Roberta, wherever she... I think that was fantastic music. Thank you very much. Good. My name is Timothy Cole at Harry Coleman. There are different ways we name in Uganda, which is where I'm originally from. And that has a lot to do with the influence of British colonization, as well as the East African revival of 1929 to the late 1940s. And so you may only have English names, or you may only have African names, or as in my case, you may have a combination of both. So in case you're wondering why my name is not Tunda something that's really complicated to pronounce, that's the reason why. My middle name is my family name. It's not my father's last name either. None of my siblings have the same family or last name. I come from a family of eight. I'm the oldest of eight. And we all do not have the same family name or the same last name. And by the way, there's a distinction for us. Your family name is not necessarily your last name. So I ran into a lot of trouble when I moved to Canada, because when I initially applied for my British passport, they would ask us for our family name, and your family name is your traditional name. It's not necessarily your last name. And so I come to Canada and I'm filling in official government documents, and they ask me for my last name. And so I put a different name and they said, oh, we have a problem here. You know, which one is it? And so I had to labor to explain that your family name is not necessarily your last name. But that's the assumption, of course, we would make those of us who have lived here. So Atheire, which is my family name, means God's grace, God's goodness, and God's generosity. And as I said earlier, that is partly the influence of the East African revival of the 1920s to the 1940s. I was born in the capital city of Uganda. Kampala is its name. And as I mentioned earlier, I'm the oldest of eight, seven boys and one girl. I know you're saying lucky boys, isn't it? Is that what you're thinking? Or she's fine. She survived. She's a very strong woman. We did our best to prepare her for life. I grew up in Uganda. My father worked for the Bank of Uganda as an engineer. My mom was a teacher who later became a nurse and later became a businesswoman. The vocation changes were largely driven by the fact that my mom raised 11 of her siblings, 5 of her in-laws, and 8 of her own children. So being a teacher, those of you who are teachers, you know that a teacher's salary cannot do that. And those of you who are nurses, and again, Saskatchewan, those are two professions we'll be familiar with, you know, again, a nurse's salary would not do that. So my mom had to multitask to look after over 20 different individuals, and suddenly made it the reason why she decided to move into business. My conversion experience is rather long, but I'll try and edit it. I grew up in a Roman Catholic home with the religious elite, bishops, priests, and nuns. It was very routine in my family. We would have the cardinal visit, I was steeped in Catholicism from birth. Pretty much as Paul would say, he was steeped in Judaism. I was steeped in Catholicism. I could pray the rosary back and forth and do all those nice things. And I went to church every Sunday because it was mandatory in my home. In fact, the only reason you didn't go to church is if you were dead. So religion was mandatory. It was an obligation. And so out of that, for me, religion was largely driven by the fact that it was an expectation from my dad, mainly. And so there was no real meaning or any pursuit of a relationship with God or anything of that nature. It was, we were required to go to church, so we went to church. We stood up, we sat, you know, we listened to the service, which most of it was in Latin, which in itself was very telling. But this, coupled by the fact that I grew up in a very large family, led me to a kind of a series of experiences where I felt lost and life felt very meaningless. And so I started looking for meaning elsewhere. And so feeling lost, and in the middle of that sense of lostness, I dealt with what I considered a significant tragedy for the very first time. And it was the death of one of my very good friends from grade two. First time I confronted the subject of death. And I remember not being able to reconcile the fact of why God, if he existed, would allow a child in grade two to die, because, you know, it just did not make sense to me. To me at the time, it made sense. If you were 90 or 100 and you died, sure, you know, that seemed to be logical. But when you are simply, you know, 8, 9 years old and you die, just something didn't seem right about that and squaring that with God. And so I approached my priest then with my, what I considered, very deep theological questions about the meaning of life, the meaning of suffering, the meaning of death. And he didn't give me any sufficient answers. And so I kind of felt let down and disappointed. And so I decided to quit the church. At that time, I went to great length to declare myself an atheist. I did not believe in God. And for some unknown reason, I made it my personal mission to persecute Christians in my school. Something I'm not proud of, but something in me was very unsatisfied with my religious experience. I was kind of trying to find a way of expressing that. Of course, with my disappointments and anger with God, which largely is, I think, my understanding of what a lot of atheists are, is people who are really upset with God. And trying to work through that anger. It was during this search of meaning at the age of 13 that a young man who had been praying for me invited me to go to a Christian concert that I had been mocking all week long. I wondered why he would take the risk to invite me to this event, knowing who I was and what I stood for. But I reluctantly agreed to go, partly because I thought I would go and, destabilize the whole thing. And so my plan was I would go in and then I'd figure out what do I do. Do I go and, throw the loudspeaker down, or do I go and, go streaking in the building, or, something that would be disruptive to whatever they were trying to do. And so I went, and as I stood at the back of the building where, this event was taking place, I started plotting my, what I was going to do. And as I kind of plotted my strategy, which was really to go and grab the lead musician's guitar and smash it, and I don't have anything against guitars, but that's what I was thinking I was going to do. And then something strange really happened. The lead musician, or the lead worship lead of this event, suddenly stopped in the middle of a song, and he started sharing about his personal journey of faith. And this was the first time I'd had anybody talk about a journey of faith or anything of that nature. And I found myself riveted by what he was talking about. Anyway, I tried to brush whatever was going on to move forward. And again, I realized something even stranger had happened. I could not move. It's like my feet were glued to the ground. Up to this day, I can't explain what happened. All I know is it was a very unusual experience that I could not really account for. And so with my feet stuck at the back, my back was right to the wall at the back of the building. He shared his experience, and as he finished sharing the experience, I found myself weeping. Nobody needed to tell me what to do. I somehow managed eventually to walk to the front, and I knelt down totally broken and just crying, not knowing, at that moment I did not know you're supposed to say sinner's prayer and you're supposed to invite Jesus into your heart. All I knew is there was something broken in me, and I resonated with the story he told, partly because it spoke to a very deep need in my own heart. Shortly after that, I committed my life to Christ, and it was the beginning of a very, very compelling journey for me. It was very hard at the beginning, and as I went to the school and told my classmates that I was now a Christian, many of them thought that I was kind of just trying to put up a show, I eventually made it to the students' school magazine, which had an article that was titled "Saul Becomes Paul," and my picture on it. And the idea was I was pretending to be a Christian, but I was not. I later on decided to go tell my parents that I had become a Christian, to which my dad said, "Of course we are all Christians." And I said, "No, we are Catholic, and I'm trying to draw a distinction between being Catholic and being Christian." And let me say this, not to sound offensive, I do realize there are Catholics who have a profound relationship with Jesus Christ and with God, and so I understand that. But that was not the case for my family. We had a relationship with the church, and if it was a matter of who we knew in the church, we would be very close to Jesus. Because as I said, we had the cardinal in our home fairly routinely, and bishops and nuns. And so if it was an issue of who you knew in terms of making it into the kingdom of God, we would have some really good seats. But you and I know it has nothing to do with that. Eventually my dad clued in that I was letting him know that I'd become a Christian. And I went through a series of experiences where my family rejected me. My parents eventually gave me an ultimatum, and he said, if you're going to become one of those nut jobs, I use a different word, but that would be the translation, you cannot stay at my house. And so he said, you have to go live with those nut jobs. And so I was kicked out of my home as a 13 and a half year old and went to live on the street. And for a week, I slept on the street. And it was probably one of the most exciting, most meaningful experiences of my life. I never knew where I would get a meal. I did not know whether I would have a shower or not. Like, to be honest, I only had a shower the entire 7 days I was there. And my company was kids, street kids, many of whom were high on petrol fumes and all kinds of things, that would steal from everybody.